This is Terrio Media.
I don't know why I can't do it. I don't know why I'm stuck. I don't know why deals fall apart.
There's a really good chance right now, today, you have a process that's actually preventing you or stopping you from moving forward.
Hey, strap in. It's time for the Epic Real Estate Investing Show. We'll be your guides as we navigate the housing market, the landscape of creative financing strategies, and everything you need to swap that office chair for a beach chair. If you're looking for some one-on-one help, meet us at reiace.com.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Epic Real Estate Investing Show. My name is Mercedes Torres. I am lucky enough to be partners in crime with Mr. Matt Terrio, the guy who created the Epic Real Estate Empire. Now, I'm lucky enough to be his sidekick and to be able to do life with him on so many different levels. And as I've shared before, we started off with absolutely nothing. And when I say we started off with nothing, I mean we had very little money. We had very little credit. And for most of you that have followed our story, Matt started real estate investing at the ripe age of 35, when he literally was in the music business and suffered from the digital download, lost his record label, and went from making millions to bagging groceries. And that's how he found real estate investing. But the way I found real estate investing was quite unique. And it was mostly because I grew up really, really poor. Now, having said that, there was a lot of love in my house. So I never knew that I was poor until I figured out that I was poor. And I think I was about probably 12 or 13 years old when I realized, I've shared this before, especially when I am on stage, but when I was 12 years old, my sisters were that much older. They had gone away to college. And so at 12 years old, I all of a sudden found myself as an only child. Lucky me. And I was a big breakfast eater, still am. And every single morning, I would have 2 eggs, a tall glass of chocolate milk, and 4 pieces of toast. And on Sundays, my mom would go to the store and get the dozen eggs, the loaf of bread, and the chocolate milk. Well, one day, my mom used to collect coins. And one day, I saw my mom going through her coins. And I was like, oh, that's weird. My mom's going through her coins on a random Sunday. And then she disappeared for about 15 minutes and came back with a little bag of groceries that had the eggs, the milk, and the bread. And it hit me at 12 years old. My mother had to forsake and sacrifice one of her coins to buy me breakfast. And I realized at that point that we were poor. And it was at that moment that I said, it is up to me to get my family out of this poverty. Now, what does that story have to do with real estate? I know you're thinking. Well, the reality is, it took me a long time to get into real estate because my mindset was, I'm poor. I will never be able to be successful in real estate. Up until I started to really dig into personal development. And at that age, I started to learn about mindset. So for those of you who don't know my story, I actually didn't get into real estate until the age of 30. So in many cases, that was a little older. So I went back to school. I got into law school, hated it. I'm a law school dropout. I am. However, it was that ambition of me wanting to make a difference for my family that I landed in real estate. But the reality is, I spent a lot of time working on myself and on my mindset because I came from a real poor background, scarcity mindset for sure. And so I decided for this episode to really bring on an expert that not only has helped so many others in the space of mindset, but I decided to have her speak to you and to us about mindset, scarcity, about just creating that for yourself. So without further ado, I'm going to allow her to introduce herself because who better than to introduce oneself than thyself? So without further ado, I'd like to welcome the author of The Mindful Millionaire, Lisa Peterson. Lisa, thank you so much for joining the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast. How are you today?
I'm so good. Thank you, Mercedes, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. You know, as I shared a little bit of my story, I decided to share this story on our podcast. I often share it from stage. I don't think I've ever shared it on our podcast, but I share it because when I speak in public, so many people come to me afterwards saying, I related to growing up poor. I related to what you said. And so who better than to have an expert to help us and walk us through the entire space of mindset? So Lisa, I want you to introduce yourself and I want you to tell us about Lisa.
Beautiful. Not too distant from what you're sharing, I definitely grew up in a home that was filled with scarcity mindset. My parents got together right after high school. My dad had just gotten out of jail by the time they met. And that was an interesting, you know, right out of high school, out of jail, having children. I think I was born like 9 months to the day after they were married. And I grew up in a home where my mom eventually became a hairdresser and my father was unemployed a lot and actually sold drugs on the side. So wasn't the, you know, classic situation that I would have liked growing up. There was a lot of struggle. There was a lot of stress. And I think it taught me a lot, like you, early on in life. I think I learned about the concept of money at about 8, where I put the pieces together that we didn't ever have extra money. We were able to get by, but somebody was showing me that you could take a bunch of dimes and put them into a roll of dimes and that it added up to whatever amount of money. And it was so exciting to me because I was like, wait a minute. So if I start saving dimes, then I can like attract and have money. That was what came to me. And I kind of became obsessed at a really young age about money. I thought, if I have money and my parents don't and they're unhappy, I'll be happy, period. That was it. And I started working at 9 for their business. And then their business went bankrupt. And at about that time, I think I was 12, 13, and I ended up doing some different jobs in the neighborhood until I could lie about my age at age 14 and get a job with McDonald's, you know, like,
wow.
But I started saving every penny. And interesting enough, my parents, obviously they hadn't gone to college, but there was a dream that I had to be able to go to college and they couldn't really help me with any of that stuff. So I had to figure out like, how do you apply to college? How do you figure these things out? And I think from a young age, I had to take care of myself. And I made this decision that if I had a lot of money, everything would be fine. So kind of fast forwarding, because it's an important part of my story, I ended up eventually getting an MBA in finance. And I went to work for one of the largest banks in the world. And I quickly rose up the ranks, which was kind of remarkable because the people that I was working with had gone to Harvard and Brown, and I had gone to UC Davis and Cal State Hayward for my MBA. And it was cool to think that I had earned my, you know, opportunity in life. And yet, sadly, in 1999, my father was brutally murdered, and he was estranged from the family at the time. And I share that only because it was one of those moments where your whole life that you thought was like going everywhere you wanted it to go broke me open to notice that I was actually really unhappy. I had a baby. I had my lovely husband, who I still thankfully have today. Like, husband number one is still the husband, you know, all these years later. But like, I was a wreck inside, and I had decided as long as I was a successful human, everything would be perfect. And yet I wasn't. And my dad's death caused me to go on a, you know, now what I'll say, not religious so much, but spiritual quest to figure out the meaning of life and figure out what beliefs did I have that were getting in my way that were keeping me from actually living my best life? And so that was in my early 30s. I'm now in my late 50s. And I'm grateful that I was able to take this horrible thing that happened with my father and turn it into gold, because I do feel like I am, without question, hands down, living my best life now. One of the reasons that I'm doing that is because back in 1992, my husband decided to go into construction. We built our first house. We have been investing in real estate for 30 years now. And as a result of that, we have created this financial freedom where we don't have to work, you know, for other people or even in our own businesses. I work in my business for the joy of it, not for the money. That's no longer an incentive, and really in any way, shape, or form. It's all about joy for me. Like, I make decisions based on joy. And, you know, I started teaching meditation and mindfulness practices in 2003. I've been running this company. I ultimately became a financial advisor after I left the corporate world, and helping people with their money and mortgage banking, and then eventually financial advising and investing. And I let all of that go 10 years ago because I realized that while I could do all of those great things and help people make more money with their money, I was actually a specialist more around the behavior that people were engaging and what kept some people from having lots of money but never being happy, like I was, you know, 25 years ago, but also people who struggle with money their whole life and they can't understand why they keep repeating bad behaviors that get them into trouble and prevent them from having the freedom they want, and a whole bunch of other people in between. But that became my passion. And that's why I ultimately wrote my book, The Mindful Millionaire, to help people in this relationship with money.
Yeah. It's so amazing how we don't realize it as parents. What we do, what we say is being absorbed by our offspring on such a level that sometimes we don't even realize. You know, we could be talking about the dinner bill of dinner last night, and, you know, we can complain about it or whatever, but our kids pick up on that. And I mean, that's exactly how it was for me. My mother had no idea I was watching her look at her coins and decide which one she was going to actually use. Lisa, you said something super interesting that just caught me, and I'm going to take you back when you said, I was a wreck inside, but on the surface, you know, I kind of had it all. What was causing what were the thoughts going through your mind when you were a wreck inside, but like on the outside, you were like picture perfect to like the average American? Describe that to us.
Yeah. It had a lot to do with the negative self-talk that was going on inside of me. I had never learned. It's interesting because my parents loved us, but they didn't love themselves. So I grew up in a safe environment overall, in that I felt like my mom was always there for me. She cared for me. And my dad as well, in a different way, but they were really messed up. And both of them died early in life, you know, early 50s for my dad, mid, late, their 60s for my mom. Like, they both had very traumatic backgrounds before I came into the picture when I was born. And they carried that into their lives. And they had such inner demons that they passed those inner demons on to my brother and I. And it was a harsh. So what we do when we have a lot of trauma and we also don't know how, we don't develop proper skills to take care of our relationship with ourselves, which is how I would describe it, is we'll pick things. Like for me, I picked money, right? And for my brother, I think he picked drugs as a release. Like, we'll pick something that we think we can have control over. And if we can have control, then everything's going to be okay. And after my dad passed away, one of my biggest lessons that I had to learn, even before I could start to look inside of this relationship I had with myself, which wasn't healthy, was a Buddhist teaching about the fact that we are actually not in control of what happens to us in our lifetime.
Wow.
And it took me years to get that message.
I was just going to say, that is so deep. That is so, thank you for sharing. Okay, so you acknowledge that you had this negative self-talk. Like, it was probably the dramatic experience of you losing your father that, you know, hit you so hard that it forced you kind of to look at yourself. Like, how did you acknowledge and understand my self-talk is really negative, or what are my thoughts are not helping me? Like, what happened that hit you?
It was 150% the art of meditation. I had to learn that just because a thought is happening does not mean it's me, it's real, and that I have to believe it. What I saw from, you know, this 25-year experience of daily meditation is that it's one and the same for most people. The thought comes and we believe the thought. Yeah. And the emotion comes and we believe the emotion. I'm angry and therefore I'm going to act out because I'm angry. Like, there's no delay. There's no separation of realizing that you are not your thoughts. You are not your emotions. You are none of those things. And so meditation helps us to build sort of a buffer of space and time where even if it's a split second, the thing happens. And I can pause and be like, okay, so there's a thought, there's an emotion, but it's not me. And it's not actually even real. I can question my thoughts. I can question my experiences. So in the beginning, you're just looking at what's coming at you as a human being. But after a while, you know, many years, and it really was a many year journey, you start to be like, okay, it's not just about what's happening. But it's these experiences that I come up with. It's the meaning that I'm giving every single thing that's happening in my life that I have some problems with. I am giving really crappy meaning to just about everything that's happening. And that is me. That is no one else. There is no victim here in my life, but the victim was strong when it's coming and you're like, well, this person just cut me off in traffic, or this person just cut me out of a deal, or this person, you're like, wait a minute, the world is out to get me. And I had to pause and realize that there was a lot of victim story growing up and that it was all created by my mind and my parents' minds and the rest of the world's minds. Like, I'm not saying a lot of people don't think this way, but I had to reach a point where I'm like, it's all BS.
Yeah.
And what does my life look like when I stop that?
Yeah. That is, I'm fascinated with by what you're saying. And I'm fascinated for a number of reasons, but I truly believe that mindset has a lot to do with everything in your life. But it took me a very long time to figure that out. And of course, we're on a real estate investing podcast talking about mindset. But I mean, I bring it to the forefront because it's so relevant. But okay, so you had this traumatic event. You started meditation. I love meditating. I often find myself saying, I don't have time to meditate. And my probably meditation is not like your level of meditation, but I at least try to take at least 15 minutes in the morning to just be grateful and think about, you know, other things other than real estate and Epic Real Estate and cash flow savvy. But when this first happened, how did you say, okay, I need to figure out how to change my mindset and how to meditate? Because some people don't even understand meditation, because I know I didn't. So help me make that connection, how you did it and how you found it. Because you came from very dark background, if you know what you shared. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy. It didn't sound fun. So how did you make that connection?
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing is that I had an intuitive nudge that at the time, Buddhism and the Eastern practices would be helpful to me. Because at the time that my dad was killed, I actually didn't believe in God, which is really interesting. I don't feel that way anymore. But at the time, I had a fear of like somebody having power over me versus me taking charge and kind of running with it. So I'm blessed that it came to me that like maybe the Eastern traditions would help me right now because they're very focused on death, interesting enough. And I went to a bookstore. I write about this in my book. I went to a bookstore in San Francisco and I walked out with like 10 books, and every book had death in the title after my dad was killed. And as I started to read these books, I was like, oh, so if you understand death, you will actually be able to live more fully. And it was fascinating because most of our culture wants to deny any conversation about death whatsoever. And when I realized that that was a helpful teaching to me, the other teaching that kept coming through in all the books was, you need to meditate. You need to have some ability. But I also want to say that having taught people meditation for 25 years, I would never put anyone through what I went through to get to where I am today. Like in the book, there is a focus of like, okay, you don't have to spend 10 years figuring out how to meditate like I did. Like you can do it a lot faster. And when we have, like you said, 10 or 15 minutes a day, it is enough. And what I've learned over time is that if we just like get up, let's say, and sit on the cushion, or we get our coffee or tea or what have you, and we sit on our cushion, that's a big assumption about how we operate as human beings. Like typically the mind is very active in the morning and it's got a lot of things going on. And so I always say that if you're going to meditate, it's really important that you're going to focus on your breathing for like 5 minutes before, because breathing is like the most important thing in life, just clear. We can't go seconds without breath. We can go days without food and water, but we can't go seconds without breath. Like breath is the ultimate clearer of toxicity in our mind, body, and even I'd say our spiritual connection. So 5 minutes of focusing on the inhalation and the exhalation naturally calms us and makes our mind more pliable to focus on a object. And so the second part is we need an object to focus on. Just emptying our minds is actually not helpful very much. Like it doesn't really do much. It shows us that it's really tough. Most people can't do it, even when you've been meditating for years. So what we can do is we find an object that means something to us. For parents like us, the object could be the love, the unconditional love we feel for our children. And that is the only thing. So now you've had this breath practice. Now you're going to focus on how much you love your children. And you're going to hold that. You're going to open your heart. And you're going to connect in with the mind is focused on the heart, the feeling of how much you love your children. And that's all I want you focusing on for the next 10 minutes. Oh, and that's it.
Wow. Okay. And so baby steps are a suggestion, it sounds like, just to take one step at a time to get you to that space. Okay. So you started this practice. I'm sure it took a lot of practice to perfect it. We fast forward to, you know, you're working in corporate America, you know, you've obtained financial freedom. What was financial freedom for you? Because you had already achieved it. You were climbing up the corporate ladder at this bank, but you were still unfulfilled. You mentioned your words where you were a wreck. So what was the financial freedom aspect for you? And then how did you know when you reached it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. So 20 years ago, we became self-made millionaires. And how I would define that is a net worth of over $1 million. Some of that money may have been in our primary home, but because we flip our homes, we'll build them and live in them for a few years and sell them. I knew that we were on the right track 20 years ago, but just because you have $1 million with two people does not mean you are done. Like, I have a very clear understanding of things like inflation and how do you have enough money to create a positive income stream that would take care of all of your financial needs here until, you know, for me, longevity lives in my family till I'm 99 years old. Am I going to have enough money to make it so? At this point, the way I define it is that the assets that we have and the way that we've distributed those assets more than cover our financial needs on a month-to-month basis. So that income stream coming in, most of it is passive now, will take care of us. And I can also look at the spreadsheets and know that there's a really good chance that we are going to leave our family a lot of money. Our children will have a lot of money if it's there. It's not our intention to do that because we can live very, very comfortably on the money that's created and interest and the return on assets, and we're good. We don't need more.
I love it.
Thanks for sitting tight while we pay our light bill. We'll be back
right after this.
Ever hear someone say, "I have too much money"? Me neither. Let's get you some more. Back to the show.
I often have our students go through an exercise and I ask them for their freedom number. And the freedom number is the number that you feel that you are going to be able to live the life that you want. And that could be $1 million. It could be $10 million. It's whatever that number is for you. And so I love how you defined it, because you said now that you'd make a lot of decisions in your financial world based off of joy. If it brings you joy, then you will make the decision. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I make a decision based off of numbers because I do real estate all day long. I want you to tell me, well, how do you not look at the numbers and look at joy first? You probably do look at the numbers, but joy comes first. I love that.
Yeah, I have two buckets now that I look at, and it's a very unique approach. And I would say it's very spiritually led. So we, right now I'm talking to you from a home that we completed about a year ago and we live in right now. But when I was making the decision about investing in building this house that's next door to two houses that we own on this street, that we knew we could Airbnb the houses we were living in, and all of that was great. And we also knew that we have experience with like living in a house for a few years and selling it so that we can avoid, you know, the income tax for that $500,000. So when I was making the decision, if this project made sense, I have the dollars and cents piece of it. Like, I think this home at the time is going to sell for $850,000. It's going to cost me about $550,000 to build that house. That is like the control number. Like, I'm not going to do the investment if it didn't make sense from like a dollars and cents perspective. Actually, from all the years of investing, that's the least interesting thing for me of all. I want to be crystal clear. I won't do the project if that doesn't make sense. But the reason I do it is because of all the magic. And I'll say I have another way of looking at, like, am I on track? Is this making sense? Is this bringing joy into my life? Number one, I talked my daughter and her boyfriend into quitting their jobs and coming and learning with dad how to build this house from the ground up. And I wanted to, they lived 12, 14 hours away. We wanted to have time with my daughter at this pivotal age of like 24 years old and get to know him in a way that, you know, only by living in close quarters. They moved into our guest house. They quit their jobs. They came to Sedona and my son was still here. He hadn't gone to college yet. And the group of us, right, the four of us plus Kelby, got to build this incredibly joyful life for a little over a year together, about a year and a half. That's joy.
Yeah.
And that was magical. And in the course of doing this, you know, I shared this with you offline. My daughter and Kelby started an Instagram content creation fun gig, not expecting to make any money from it, but to find friends who loved outdoor adventuring as much as they did. And in the course of building the house, they would have downtime. And Zoe and Kelby would go out and mountain bike and hike and go camping. And they would take pictures and put it on Instagram and share what was going on for them. But ultimately, that became a business. They did not actually have to go back to work. It has exploded and they're creating a business that is exceeding anything that I could have ever dreamt and only growing. So joy of spending time with them, giving them ability to do something we could have never done as children, you know, in our 20s, and have freedom like they got by being here. And they got paid to do this, but that wasn't the point, right? It was about, let's do this and see where it leads. So they got a business. But then the other piece of it, which goes into the magic bucket, and this is where I get the most joy from real estate investing, is instead of that home being worth $850,000, you know, now let's say it's worth $1.35 million. That money that was created from that action is my magic and my abundant number. And I never have any expectation. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I create space in my life continuously for magical opportunities to appear. And that's one of them.
I love that. So you mentioned something about you create space in your life for that. Tell me what that means.
I think this is when we leave. If we imagine that we're floating down a river, I think most people are grabbing on the side of the river to the weeds, holding on for dear life. That is scarcity mindset. And when we start to move into an abundant living mindset, it's letting go of the embankment and realizing that we live in an abundant universe, that there are opportunities for us everywhere. The idea that we have to hurt someone or damage the environment, you know, radically, or like take advantage and manipulate other people to make money are all scarcity ways of thinking. And they get us into trouble as a humanity. None of that is necessary. There is more than enough to go around. And when we let go of these ideas and these beliefs that only when we win and it's okay if other people lose, like all of that just gets let go of. And I love you, Mercedes, because I love what you're doing, because I could feel the abundance in what you're creating for people. And that's why I was so excited to talk to you even more. But like, let that stuff go and trust. Find a way to trust that you are going to be totally fine. And, you know, the universe has your back. This doesn't mean you're not careful, right? Like nothing in that, but that you will be okay. And if bad things happen, you can also develop resilience tools that keep you from making really bad stories in your mind that just because this one bad situation happened, it's going to keep happening. No, you just had some bum luck and you're going to be okay. And you're going to bring yourself back and you're going to keep moving forward.
Ugh, so well said, Lisa. I feel like you just took the words and thoughts out of my brain and you put them in like English. You know, Matt and I were about just our mission in life is helping others create financial freedom. We are of the mindset that real estate is the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate chance of creating real wealth. Like Matt and I are examples of that. And so we created two very basic courses. One is called Your First Deal. It's super affordable. It's less than $100. And we walk you through exactly what it's like to get your first deal. And why does it work? Because Lisa, it's exactly the steps that I took to get my first deal when I had no money and no credit. Okay. And so we offer coaching with that. You know, it's Monday evenings at 5:30 p.m. You can hop on a coaching call and we're there live, like walking you and coaching you through it. And I can't tell you, Lisa, how many people like they want it, but the talk in their head just doesn't let them see past step number one, which is probably the easiest step in the whole thing. Well, it's you can argue that. Some people would say it's the hardest step to take the first step. But the reality is I lay it all for you. So to that student that wants it, but doesn't know how to take that first step in their mind, not the first step that I'm physically telling you to take to get find a deal, but in their mind, what has to happen to take that first step out of scarcity?
Yeah, it's good to be thinking about this. The first thing is if you've got judgment about yourself, you are thinking you're stupid because you haven't already figured this out, or, you know, anything that is going to do what I was doing earlier in life, you've got to notice that first. Like there's a good chance that there's a voice inside of you that's got more control of your future than you do. Realizing that this isn't you. that's talking to you. It feels like it's you. And sometimes it might even feel like the voice of God, like just saying, but it isn't. It is safety. It is fear. It is running your life right now. And you gotta name it. You gotta name what's going on. This is fear. I am scared. I am scared of being taken advantage of. I am scared of, you know, somebody overpricing something, or I'm afraid of losing my money. Like, the best thing we can do, and I've learned this from neuroscientists, is that as long as it's only trapped inside and we're unconscious to what's happening, we can't change it. Our amygdala goes crazy and we can't actually go forward. We can't make decisions. We'll just keep pushing, what is that, kicking the can down the road. So neuroscience tells us that there's a couple of things that we can do. Number one is name it. Name the fear. I am scared. I am afraid. I am, you know, fill in the blank. What are you afraid of? Be honest with yourself. Just by doing that, you actually start to calm the amygdala in the brain, which is your fear response. And it gives you some space to be like, well, is that a rational fear? Is that really what I want to be leading my life? You know, and sometimes it is helpful to be like, oh, this is how the scarcity is showing up in my life. This is how it's manifesting. Does that make sense? Like the naming? Because
total sense. So you first, you notice it. You notice that you're having this negative self-talk. Once you notice this negative self-talk, you name it, you identify it. And then once you identify it, you analyze it. Like, okay, it's fear. It's something that is brought on from a past thought that is not existing today. Then what's the action step to change it?
Yeah, so the action step can be, they can be separate. Sometimes naming is enough. Just the people will be like, oh my God, I feel so much better. I'm just going to do it. And then sometimes we have to go to the next step, which is a reframe. So just like for me, this has been big. I avoided being an entrepreneur, which is funny. We were investing in real estate, but I didn't look at that as an entrepreneur. Like I was afraid of starting my own business because my parents' business had gone bankrupt in a very pivotal time in my life. So I was like, oh no, 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 no. So it wasn't until what, 47 that I gave myself the permission to be a business owner. So the reframe in that case was just because my parents bankrupted in their business when I was 12 years old does not mean that I am going to bankrupt my business. I have a lot more knowledge about money than my parents did. I can do this. I can try being an entrepreneur without the fear that I'm going to make bad decisions like they did.
Wow. That is huge. I mean, just that last thing that you said is, I was 47 and I didn't want to start a business because my parents' business had bankrupt 40 years ago. And it's just amazing how you carry that throughout your life, maybe on a conscious level, maybe on a subconscious level, but it's there. And identifying it and noticing it is just potentially life-changing. I mean, literally. Wow. Well, you just blew my mind, Lisa. That's why we have people like you on our show. Like, I think these thoughts, but I don't have the professional ability to articulate it the way you have. Awesome. Okay. So once we identify it, we rename it, then you go into action. And then fear keeps coming into play for whatever reason. Something happens. And I would call it, for the lack of my terms, a relapse. You relapse back into the scarcity mindset. So then how do you pump yourself up? How do you do it, Lisa? Like, okay, that was just a thought. Like, you go back to re-identify it and then do the same thing, or do you change the track completely?
I think this is where community can be really helpful. I mean, this is why people are listening to your show. This thought that, like, I'm not alone in this. When we do things together with other people, or we know that we have a community to support us, it is a completely different situation. So find your tribe, right? Find your people, find the people that are going to be there to help you move forward. And interesting, because I'm giving a talk about this whole thing and community and the power of community at RubeCon next week. And the other thing that I heard over and over again is this voice that sometimes we have to learn from other real estate investors, particularly, is like, sometimes you just have to make a decision. You will never be able to win the game in analysis paralysis. And analysis paralysis is, or constant analysis of the situation, collecting more info, more info, more info, is a fear technique. Yeah. It's like it started out good and then it went bad. And so you just have to take make a decision and take one step and then another step and another step, because you cannot fake this stuff. You've got to take action.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that thing that you said about community, like, so much lives in community, but everything lives in conversation. So speaking about community, we are both speaking at RubeCom. It is March 13th through the 16th, 2024. I know people listen to this down the line. So RubeCom happens every year. Shout out to Dustin from Massive Passive Income. I had him on the show a couple of months ago. He's amazing and he puts on a phenomenal conference. So I believe there are still tickets available. I will put the information in the show notes. So thank you for mentioning that. We get to speak about, I will be speaking about creating passive income. I'm sure you will be speaking on mindset. But every time I go to any conference like this and I surround myself with like-minded individuals, it is such a game changer. So to that listener that's out there that says, oh, I can't go to these conferences. No, if you can't go to this conference, which by the way, this one is super affordable, but you can go to your local RIAs or you can go to meetup groups. The idea is to surround yourself with the community of people that are like-minded. So if you are stuck in the gutter, like I was with my mindset, thinking I was never going to be able to be successful, or for me, it was, I'm never going to have money. It was community that made a difference. So thank you, Lisa, for bringing that up. So tell us what you are going to be talking about at RubeCom.
A lot of the things that we have been exploring, mindset, but what I have seen again and again, and I've been a part of what Dustin's built this past 3 years, and I think about how much easier the community is making it for people to get over their fears. So I wanted to talk about the power of community and how people within the community have been helping each other and some of the success stories of what's happened and why it's been so pivotal for people. Because I know at the audience, it's very broad. You have people like me who've been investing for 30 or more years. You have folks who are just starting out. But what I've learned is that even when we have a lot of experience in investing, we forget that there's only a small portion of all the information out there that we could ever know in our lifetime. And if we are not making it an active practice to get out, go to conferences, talk to other people, there's a really good chance that we are leaving a lot of money on the table and we're getting myopic. And so my goal is to really touch everyone in the room, wherever they're at, to make sure that they're thinking, am I doing enough in this regard of reaching out and building trust-based relationships with other people that will be able to help me in my investing journey?
I love it. I absolutely love it. So having said that, Lisa, what advice would you give to a new investor who's considering jumping into the space of real estate, but is boggled down by that self-talk, negative self-talk?
Mm-hmm. Other than reading my book, where's my shameless plug?
No, not a shameless plug. It is an amazing book. We will have your information in the show notes, and we'll also have the information to RubeCom, just because that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
We're here to pay it forward and provide value. So keep 100%. Plugging.
The issue is that I want you to have a process that is helping you move forward. There's a really good chance right now, today, you have a process that's actually preventing you or stopping you from moving forward.
Ugh, so well said. That process that is preventing people from moving forward, most of the time, you don't understand that that process exists. I often hear, I don't know why I can't do it. I don't know why I'm stuck. I don't know why deals fall apart. Well, they're probably living a process that's not serving them clearly. And so it just goes back to what you said. Notice it, name it, analyze it. And just that in itself can propel someone to get to the next step. Doesn't necessarily have to be the next level, just the next step. Anything that's a little bit more of an improvement. So I will have your book in the show notes, but is there a place where people can go get more information about you, about your book?
Yeah.
Tell me all about it.
Yes, definitely. One thing I'll add about the book, that it's longer book, but the reason being is I put everything that I've learned about money and mindset transformation and the things that I was doing, coaching my clients through, like I put it all in the book. So if somebody really wanted to like change their lives, I mean, an investment of less than $20, like that was my goal, right? The giver's gain. Like I'll just put it out there. And for those who are ready, it's available to them. And to answer your question directly, you can go to wealthclinic.com/vision. And that's an opportunity to opt in and, you know, receive some goodies, including the first chapter of the book. So you could get a feel like, oh, is this what I need? Is this going to be helpful to me? It also, there's a meditation. I have a very unique way of showing people meditation strategies that can help them create more of what they want in their lives and drop away to scarcity. So the meditation walks you through a process I've been teaching for about 6 or 7 years. It's helped thousands of people drop away to scarcity, step into more abundance. And there's a whole bunch of other things, but it gets you started on this journey and it doesn't cost anything.
I absolutely love it. Is your book also available in audio form or not yet?
Yes, it's in audio. I did the narration of the book and then it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the big.
Perfect. Perfect. Websites. I love it. Okay. So last parting words, Lisa, if you were to say and give us that one golden nugget that made all the difference for you when you were stuck in life, you were hit with trauma, and then you did something that made a difference. What's that one golden nugget, that one something that made such a difference for you that could potentially make a difference for somebody else?
Believing in myself, believing in my ability to create what was most important to me was the biggest shift in my life, hands down. And what I would say to everybody is that you're probably selling yourself short. You're probably not giving yourself enough credit for how far you've come to arrive in this moment. And I believe in you. Mercedes believes in you. We don't have to meet you to believe in you. Like, we want the best for you. We want you to create the things that are most important to you. And the sooner you can find allies, find community members, find mentors, whether it be reading a book or listening to this show or what have you, like, understand that none of us create this just for our own personal gain. Like, this is because we care about you and we want you to succeed. We want everything that we've ever done in our own lives for you too. And you're the first one who's got to believe that. Yeah. For yourself.
So well said, Lisa. So well said. You're the first one that has to believe in yourself, and you're the first one to doubt yourself. So One of the things that I just gotten from your whole talk is it all starts with your self-talk. So Lisa, I cannot thank you enough for sharing almost an hour. So I apologize. I know this was supposed to be 30 minutes, but I just couldn't interrupt you because you were just sharing such valuable information that I know made a difference for me and can make a difference for so many others. Lisa, thank you so, so much. I cannot wait to see you speak at RubeCom. I will be sharing a stage with you. So I'm thrilled to do that. And thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast. And for my listener, please do not forget to give us a comment. Give us a comment on how this episode made you feel, if it did anything for you. And give us a shout out to Lisa, because surprises may be coming your way. please feel free to share this episode with someone that can benefit from just the lessons and the valuable insights that Lisa provided for us. As we say in the epic real estate investing world, real estate is the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate chance at creating real wealth, and cash flow is queen. So to our next episode, I will see you real soon. Take care and God bless you.
And that wraps up the epic show. If you found this episode valuable, who else do you know that might too? There's a really good chance you know someone else who would. And when their name comes to mind, please share it with them and ask them to click the subscribe button when they get here, and I'll take great care of them. God loves you and so do I. Health, peace, blessings, and success to you. I'm Matt Terrio, living the dream.
Yeah, we got the cash flow. You didn't know, homeboy, we got the cash flow.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.